Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the battle of the big ideas. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we've noticed that recently the concept album has made a big comeback. The Roots, Björk, and Coldplay, whose album Milo Xylado you're hearing in the background, all have new releases that follow the time-honored format. And that got us to thinking about some of the great concept albums of the past. And that, in turn, sets us up for a battle royale in this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown.
And kicking off today's Smackdown, it's Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon versus The Who's Quadrophenia. Here to represent each side in the studio are music and entertainment reporter Gary Burton and author and pop culture correspondent for Grantland.com, Andy Greenwald. Guys, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Nice to be back. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
It is round one, the Battle of Britain. 1973, Gary Burton, the album The Dark Side of the Moon comes out. This is the first of our three little mini Smackdowns
Yes. Today.
Is this the ultimate concept album?
I feel I almost have an unfair advantage to start here because I think this is the quintessential concept album. I think if you were to ask anybody who was just a casual music fan to name a concept album, they'd probably come up with Dark Side of the Moon.
And what is the concept?
The concept really is, I guess, a look at the human mind, the psyche. It touches on mental illness, on fear and hope, the subconscious and what makes us tick. They were trying to sort of, Roger Waters in particular, was trying to explore what made us work, what was the way our minds worked and reflected in the music they were making.
And specifically what made us not work in the case of former Pink Floyd member Syd Barrett. This was
the start
personal.
Of a kind yeah. of almost an obsession with it, and for a good reason, because Syd Barrett had been a close friend of Roger Waters, obviously, in starting the band, and he'd suffered a mental illness, and this was a subject they came back to many times over their career, but it was something that really sparked up, I think, the initial idea of Dark Side of the Moon, and just that look into, as I say, the human psyche and what makes us work and what makes us dysfunctional, as you say.
And the idea of literal lunacy, the big concept in this classic concept album from 1973 by Pink Floyd. Us and Them is from Pink Floyd's 1973 concept record called The Dark Side of the Moon. Gary Burton thinks he has this first round of our Soundcheck Smackdown sewn up. Andy Greenwald, do you counter with Quadrophenia by The Who?
I'm sorry, I just drifted off for a moment there. I'm back awake now. I would say that, while Gary has a strong point, that most people probably would agree that Dark Side of the Moon is the preeminent concept album of our time, and they would acknowledge that. They would also probably either yawn, giggle, or have a uncomfortable acid flashback to middle school at the planetarium. So, yes, my album
And you're saying that as if it's a bad thing.
Well, I'm leaving it up to the listeners to decide. My album is Quadrophenia by The Who.
Why?
Basically, I think that when it comes to concept albums, as with almost all art, it's probably wise to write what you know. And whereas most people think of a concept album as something very large and bombastic and pretentious, drifting into outer space or the limits of consciousness, as we just heard, Pete Townsend actually made a very complicated, messy, and tortured album actually about himself and his band and about his generation. The title Quadrophenia refers to sort of double your pleasure version of schizophrenia, four different personalities. And so on one level, he was writing about the four distinct personalities in his own band. but really also writing about what happened to the kids that had first fallen in love with The Who 10 years ago and how maybe his own band and rock and roll in general wasn't an answer anymore, which I think was interesting then and is interesting now.
So the concept here is identity?
I think you're asking the right questions. I think there are a lot of questions here.
Well, I, if that's the answer to the question, it's not such a dissimilar answer from Dark Side of the Moon.
True, but I think that in Pete Townsend's case, he's very much grounding it in what happened to the children of working class Britain who had fallen in love with style and music. And a lot of the album deals with mods versus rockers. And to me, I think the track that we're going to play is one of the most interesting tracks maybe in rock and roll, where his protagonist, Jimmy, actually goes to a Who concert, meets the Who, they treat him terribly, and he's completely disillusioned that, you know, this band that he had put all of his faith in isn't worth the effort.
From the same year, 1973, and The Who's Quadrophenia. Punk and the Godfather, The Who, from their 1973 concept album Quadrophenia. Andy Greenwald is putting that up against the behemoth that is Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, which Gary Burton has championed for us in our first of three rounds in our concept edition of the Soundcheck Smackdown. How do these albums stack up, apart from the concept, just purely musically? I mean, Gary, Dark Side of the Moon...
I mean, Dark Side of the Moon has been written about ever since the day it came out and still continues to be debated endlessly. You can just go online, you can read books about it, you can read many, many interviews with the band, still trying to get to the nub of what they were talking about. I sometimes think that they perhaps don't even know themselves. I think that often happens with albums. We get a lot out of them that right. they didn't intend to put in there in the first place, maybe.
Andy, do you think, you said messy was a word you used to describe Quadrophenia. Do you think Pete Townsend had this all worked out, or are we working it out as we hear these songs?
I think a little bit of both. I think that's actually one of the best things about concept albums in general, is that the story can be what the artist claims it is, and then decades of listening can add narrative to it.
Soundcheck listeners, what do you think? This is just the first of three battles in our Battle Royale edition of Soundcheck Smackdown. Who wins the Battle of Britain? Is it Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon or The Who's Quadrophenia? You can leave a comment on the webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck, or you can call us, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Speaking of the music, if you take individual tracks out of this record... Some of them stand well alone. I mean, Love, Rain, or Me from Quadrophenia, for example.
Exactly.
Radio hit. It stands beautifully by itself. Does that make it less of a concept record because you can kind of pull pieces out of it like that?
No, I mean, I think that if you think some of the great novels of our time had some of their chapters excerpted in The New Yorker, for example, and they stand alone that way as well, I actually think it speaks better to the album as a whole if people have different entryways into it. Mm. I think if you tell someone that an album, an 80-minute masterpiece about the workings of, you know, working-class Britain or the human mind, depending on what we're talking about, that you need to just sit down and absorb it, that's not a normal way for people to, to become a fan of music in general.
I sort of have the exact opposite view of that, really, because I just think the whole notion of the concept album is something that you should be able to put on and listen to beginning to end. I mean, with Dark Side of the Moon, I don't think I ever really go and pick out a specific track. I even think if I have the iPod on shuffle and one of the tracks comes on, I probably go to the next track because I'm in the mood to hear the whole album. And I think it needs to be listened to beginning to end, particularly with The Wizard of Oz playing in the background. or unreliably informed, some herbal cigarettes and lying down in a chair. But I do think that is, to me, the notion of this as a concept album is you listen to the whole thing, you're taken on this journey, you're taken somewhere else, and there's a chance to sort of meditate, for want of a better word, on the themes that are running through the album.
So, when a track like Money is pulled out of the rest of the album, I mean, to me, that Money has always been, it's the radio single from Dark Side of the Moon. has always seemed to me to be the, maybe the weakest link.
It's the one that definitely stands out as being a little different to all the others. I don't think for a second they were setting out to write a hit, but it's just the one that got picked up. And I think part of that is because of the time that's gone by, we've kind of got used to that, and it's kind of put it in a different place in our minds.
The first round of our Battle of Big Ideas, featuring The Who's Quadrophenia against Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, both came out in 1973. A little bit here from the Pink Floyd record. Money. All right, in a moment, more in our Battle of Big Ideas. Our Soundcheck Smackdown on concept albums continues in our next matchup. Marvin Gaye battles Johnny Cash as the album What's Going On takes on Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison. That's our next round coming up. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today's Soundcheck Smackdown is a battle royale when we're throwing pairs of concept albums from the past into the ring. In round one, we went back to 1973, pitted Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon against The Who's Quadrophenia. Now, it's all about social commentary. Marvin Gaye's 1971 album, What's Going On, which you're hearing in the background, versus Johnny Cash's 1968 album, At Folsom Prison. And joining me again in the studio, Gary Burton and Andy Greenwald for round two. All right, Gary, once again, we find you with perhaps the more iconic of the two in terms of being a concept album. What's Going On?
Yes, I think so. This is the album that really changed the image and the fortunes of both Marvin Gaye and the Motown record label on the one level, but also was this meditation on the state of the United States and the world, set against the backdrop of the Vietnam War, against rising poverty, against unemployment. And I'm sure that at the time he thought, this is going to be a statement and I hope we're kind of done with this. It's so relevant today, it's frightening, really. And I think the key thing about this album, I think, is in the title, that there is no question mark. It isn't what's going on, it's a question. This is a statement. This is like a newsletter. This is kind of rap before rap came along, telling you what's happening on the streets. This is telling you this is what it's like at the moment, and you people need to wake up and listen.
That kind of journalist element, Andy, do you find that in the Johnny Cash album at Folsom Prison, too?
I think maybe not so much journalism as documentarianism. Mm-hmm. I think that, again, this is a difficult battle. I believe I've been cast in the role of history's greatest monster here, arguing against Marvin Gaye. But I think that what's interesting to me about the Johnny Cash album is that it's not even so much a concept album per se as what I decided to call a context album.
Okay.
You know, in 1955, Johnny Cash had his famous song Folsom Prison Blues. His career then went on to great success for a few years, but by the time 1968 came around, he was sort of a ruined man in a lot of ways. His record label had was ignoring him. He hadn't had a hit in many years, and he had just emerged from a dark, dark place of drug addiction. And so what he did not do at that point was sit down and write a series of songs, conceptually about what it might be like to be in prison or about his drug addiction. He just took his life where it was at that moment and took it to the place itself. He took it to the prison. And what's so incredible about this album is you not only hear in real time the reaction of the types of people he has often sung about in his songs to those songs, but you hear him finding his voice again. You hear him, and not only that, you hear him falling in love live on record. June Carter has a wonderful duet with him on the record on Jackson. Their interplay and their warmth and flirtation is totally real and lived in front of a room full of prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And they would marry a year later, and his career rebounded, and it pretty much never went down again.
So concept album, context album, either way, it's some pretty classic singing from Johnny Cash.
Hey, will you sing a song with me?
I'd be very pleased to sing a song
sure
with you.
Sure look nice.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back in Folsom.
Well, I like to... I like the way you talk.
I'm talking with my mouth. This way
all
up
right,
here.
We got married in a fever. I had a peppered crowd. We've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out. I'm going to Jackson. Gonna mess around. Yeah, I'm going to Jackson. Look out, Jackson Town.
That is Jackson, recorded live at Folsom Prison. Johnny Cash and June Carter, they would be married later that year. And the second round of our Battle Royale in this week's Soundcheck Smackdown about concept albums pits a couple of socially conscious records. This album from 1968 at Folsom Prison and Marvin Gaye's 1971 album, What's Going On? And again, Soundcheck listeners, we'd like to know what you think. You can call us, 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. Our first round of calls produced the inevitable, Where's Sergeant Pepper?
Yes.
Or you can leave a comment on the webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And actually, why don't we head into the control room, because Joel Meyer, our producer, as always, moderating some of the comments. What's it looking like in there, Joel?
Well, John, it's a real can of worms. When you start debating the greatest concept albums of all time and you pick six of them, inevitably people are going to point out the ones that you haven't picked. So Bill notes that we didn't pick The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. By Genesis.
By Genesis. Bill from Newark wants Tommy by The Who. John from The Office just leaves this. Hello, Darkness on the Edge of Town. The greatest album ever. Mimi from New Jersey, as you mentioned, wanted Sgt. Pepper's and also the White Album as well, too. So a Beatles twofer. So that's what we're seeing right now is all the albums we didn't pick, John.
Okay. Well, we did pick Marvin Gaye, you know, which is a concept album.
Yeah.
And we did pick the Johnny Cash, you know, at Folsom Prison. I mean, the Marvin Gaye record, Andy, is, you know, very easy to kind of support as a piece of socially relevant, socially conscious. I mean, we use that term conscious now in hip hop, and I think you know, Gary was right in using that analogy before. What is happening in Folsom Prison here that, you know, sort of getting into that territory?
I think that's a very good question. I think the way to answer that is possibly to look at again at the context of the album. In 1968, Johnny Cash, as I said, was at the lowest point of his career, and the head of his record label pretty much was ignoring him. The company-wide focus was to put all their attention on pop acts and to make, you know, make light and entertaining music, mm-hmm. and to reach the largest possible audience. Johnny Cash, of course, felt that he had an audience that didn't have a voice, that wanted to hear his sorts of songs and that he could give voice to their stories. The album came about when there was a change at the top of the record label and a guy that sort of liked to ruffle feathers took over and said, you want to go to a prison? Be my guest. He called two prisons. He called San Quentin and called Folsom, and Folsom called back first.
And, of course, he would later then go to San Quentin.
He did, and I was going to say, I don't think prisons necessarily need to have PR departments, so it wasn't really a loss for San Quentin at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But just giving voice to these people who were being overlooked, and then as now, I would mm-hmm. say, as well.
What about with What's Going On, Gary, the idea of a concept album that's socially aimed? Did that album have an impact?
Oh, definitely, yes. And I think, as I say, it still resonates these days as well. I think the key thing here, and it's a similar argument as well to where Marvin Gaye was in his career. Although he wasn't particularly in a slump at the time, he was completely not at ease at all with his soulful, sexy image, singing these songs about romance that he'd done, which was part of the Motown Hit Factory. And he presented the idea of doing this album to Motown, and they didn't like the idea. Berry Gordy did not want to put What's Going On out as a single in the first place. So he was also railing against his inner demons as well and saying, I don't want to be this kind of artist. I want to do this, and I want to say something. And a few other artists were starting to come through at the time, like Stevie Wonder and the mm-hmm. Temptations had made Ball of Confusion. But, you know, he was the one that really took the ball and ran with it.
And you know, a great display of musical irony, it's those songs, What's Going On, this song, Mercy, Mercy Me, that became hits. And maybe people didn't even realize what they were listening to in terms of the social relevance, but Marvin Gaye sure did.
blue skies blue. Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury.
Mercy, Mercy Me, The Ecology, from the 1971 album What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. Round two of our Soundcheck Smackdown on concept albums is a little more conceptual, you know, the Marvin Gaye record and Johnny Cash's recording at Folsom Prison. Between the matched set, Andy, of Folsom Prison and San Quentin, was Johnny Cash making some kind of a statement about prison life, about, you know, people not given a voice because they were behind walls, behind bars?
I think that's probably very true. I think that, you know, he was, above all else, a sort of honest storyteller. And you can hear in the reaction on these records, you know, the reaction to, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die gets whoops from the audience, which is...
Although we've covered this on Soundcheck in the past, those whoops in the audience were edited in later.
Oh, my God. See, I feel this was a trap I just wandered into.
We've learned something here today. See, we should have known that already.
But my
argument with that is that the problem is that I think that Johnny Cash was still kind of doing what you expected Johnny Cash to do. And I think that the key thing with the Marvin Gaye album is that he was just doing something for him in his canon, something completely different, and I think that's why, to my mind, it was a little more brave, although singing in front of a bunch of murderers.
Bringing your wife
yeah,
to be.
Future wife. Bringing your future wife, yeah.
I think that...
Go ahead.
No, I think that in many cases, if we're talking about concept albums, we talk about people who try to impress their audience, maybe show that they're smarter than they are, and talking about things that they haven't in the past, whereas with these two albums, we're talking about two men who really wanted to reveal who they were internally,
right,
and just be true to that, despite commercial pressures.
All right, Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison from 1968. Keeps rolling on down the San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. Yes, edited in later. The whooping and the hollering after that line. I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. Johnny Cash still in Folsom Prison. And there's one more Smackdown to come in our Battle of the Concept Albums as we get all sci-fi with David Bowie's Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, and a relative newcomer, Janelle Monáe's album, The Arc Android. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. If radio shows were records, this would be our concept album, our three-part Smackdown about concept albums. So we've already matched up Big Ideas from Pink Floyd and The Who, and Social Commentary from Marvin Gaye and Johnny Cash. Our final Smackdown focuses on a favorite concept album concept, sci-fi. It's Aliens versus Automatons as we throw David Bowie's Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars into the ring against relative newcomer Janelle Monáe's debut album, The Arc Android. And joining me again in the studio, Gary Burton, music and entertainment reporter, once again picking the favorite.
Yes, I don't know how this happened, but I've been very lucky so far, I think.
Runner.
And that's right. And Andy Greenwald, once again, supporting the underdog with Janelle Monáe for round three. All right, Andy, You got a hill to climb here. Janelle Monáe, it's a recent album.
Yes.
Doesn't have the track record of the Bowie record, but it does have kind of an interesting theme.
Yes, I think actually, in some ways, rooting for her is more important right now because she's a contemporary artist and she's really pushing boundaries in her own way, in a way that's relevant to today. Janelle Monáe is a very young woman who... I believe the professional term for what she is would be a fully formed weirdo. She came...
Oh, you professionals and your jargon.
Thank you. She came literally fully formed with this sort of sui generis style from Atlanta. She's only 24 years old when she was signed, and she immediately arrived with both an idiosyncratic style. She likes to wear tuxedos. She's a great dancer. She has her own studio and whole production crew called Wonderland. She works with people with names like Chuck Lightning. And along with her and her, you know, dynamic blend of R&B and hip-hop and dance and world music and pop, she has this very interesting story that is very important to her that sort of mashes up Fritz Lang's Metropolis with The Wizard of Oz. In the album that we're talking about, The Arc Android, she gives voice to her main character, who is a messianic android who has been sent through time to save the people of Metropolis from the oppressors of freedom and love, who are known as the Great Divide. And her android, of course, is named Cindy Mayweather,
Now,
all androids.
It's a very complex story. Somehow the year is 2719. Is that the year that she comes from or the year that she is sent to?
You know, I think it's a little unclear. I believe that's the year she comes from.
Okay.
But I hope someone, a listener, can...
I'm sure, yeah, I'm
help
sure
me on that.
This is one of those albums that really had people kind of burrowing into it.
That's
which
right.
Is,
if it was 2800, it would be irrelevant.
The sign of a great concept album.
See, this is the problem with it, is that it's just there's too much going on there for me. For my tiny brain, it's just too much to try and. It's a little bit like when you see the celebrity chef shows and they show the plate of food and it looks wonderful, and then the judges taste it and they go, there's too many flavors going on here. You've overspiced it here. And that's. Wonderfully talented as she is, I think she was just kind of just saying, this is a showcase for me to show off all of my talents, to cover all of these genres, to show all these different things I can do. And it's kind of just too overblown for me.
But now, Gary, you are
too
about to
overblown.
Defend it.
I was just going to say, so Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars?
Yeah, but I think the story is a little more simple. I think Bowie himself said that the idea of Ziggy Stardust was that he was just a very simple character, and you can sort of... You can kind of read through the message and the story of the album a lot more easily, I think, than you can the Janelle Monáe one. I think she was doing the same kind of thing, but just went that one level further. Maybe we were more ready for it in 2010 than we were in the early 70s, but I don't know. There's just too much going on. And again, you know, I think just putting on a track from the Janelle Monáe album, you can do. But I think the Bowie album lends itself much more as a concept to sitting and listening to the whole thing, because the Janelle Monáe one is too much.
Nonetheless, we are going to pull a little bit out of it. In fact, this is the title track, Ziggy Stardust.
Now Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man. Then we were Ziggy's band. Ziggy really sang, screwed up eyes and screwed down hairdo, like some cat from Japan. He could lick 'em by smiling.
Well, that is definitely a story song. I mean, there's a story being told just in the song Ziggy Stardust from the David Bowie record, Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. Andy, I want to give you a chance to respond, but first I want to hear what some of our listeners have to say, because Joel Meyer's in the control room with more comments.
John, one of our listeners has given him or herself a spidery nickname. This from Daddy Long Branch. Daddy Long Branch writes, Ziggy Stardust rocks from beginning to end and never seems pretentious. Frank from the East Village agrees. He loves Janelle Monáe's album, but he says, come on, it just doesn't compare to Ziggy Stardust. Now, Brian L. from Brooklyn disagrees with our guest Gary Burton, and Brian writes, I'm pretty sure there's a storyline in there in Ziggy Stardust, but sorry, Mr. Bowie, I can't tell what the hell it is. And then, of course, John, many comments from our electronic peanut gallery with other albums from Neutral Milk Hotel, Parliament, and Bill from Frenchtown, New Jersey wants to add Queensryche's Operation Mindcrime.
Can I just quickly address this, the Sgt. Pepper thing as well? And I don't know if you guys agree with this. This is perhaps just stepping out of the SmackDown a bit, but I don't think Sgt. Pepper was ever really a concept album. I think the idea of the band being Sgt. Pepper was their idea to get away from being the Beatles.
Isn't that a concept?
And which is a concept in itself, but I don't think the album really necessarily had themes going through it that tied the whole thing together. They just made an album as this concept band. Mm. And I think, in a way, this was something that Bowie picked up on with Ziggy Stardust, in that he wanted to create a whole new persona for himself, something, again, he played with throughout his career, of course, becoming the sort of chameleon that we knew him to come to be. But I think he just wanted to stop being David Bowie for a while, inhabit this character completely, and make this album from the standpoint of Ziggy Stardust. And I think that's why it reminded me of the comments about Sgt. Pepper.
I think Gary makes an excellent point. I also think that he is trying to obscure the issue that he's defending an album that features slacker aliens dancing through black holes in order to tear the protagonist apart live on stage to either save the world or end it.
Well, there is that.
Yes. I think that the beauty of concept albums such as they are is that you can take as much of this, on a good one, you can take as much of the story as you want or leave it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that what makes Janelle Monáe's album so good is that she is so overflowing with both insane ideas but also great songs. I think Tightrope, the song that we played on the way in, it's a fantastic song, whether you know that it's about a messianic android in love with human Anthony Greendown or not.
Now, what about hairstyles? Because this is a battle of the concept hairdos here between Janelle Monáe and David Bowie.
I think one common ground we would probably be able to find here is that we probably both really admire artists who, when you go for it, go for it. Uh-huh. And there is not a single facet of David Bowie, particularly in the, I can't make your argument for you, but I'll say Janelle Monáe in that case, of the album, every aspect of her personality and her persona and her public performance is of a piece.
All right, the use of the pronoun she, her, you know, this can be a very dude-heavy topic, the concept album. It's nice to, I mean, PJ Harvey had her recent album, a great concept record about World War I, kind of darker. But, Janelle Monáe wading into waters that have been kind of dude-infested over the years.
And particularly science fiction, which is a dude party from way back. But, I think that what makes her album very very open to people who aren't, necessarily interested in reading about robots, is that it really is at root about self-expression and about self-discovery and about the journey that she has made as an artist and finding her own voice.
So let's hear a little bit from this Janelle Monáe record, The Arc Android. And actually, this piece, Make the Bus, features the band of Montreal backing her up. Just like you were a Peter Pan. Janelle Monáe, almost 30 years after the album it's up against, David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust album, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, versus Janelle Monáe's The Arc Android, two big, sprawling, elusive sci-fi stories told in music. The final round of our three-part SmackDown, our Battle Royale this week, with Gary Burton, the music and entertainment reporter, who has been... riding the heavy favorites in all three of our races.
And
Andy Greenwald, author and pop culture correspondent for Grantland.com, riding the long shots and
the underdogs.
They've been a couple of photo finishes, guys. Thanks very much for being with us on Soundcheck.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
OMG, WTF!